Good afternoon and welcome to Stage Talk, a weekly conversation about local theater. My name is Jean Paul.
And I'm Stephen Hunt. And today on our show, we'll be having Cyrano's Theater Company's production of It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play by Joe Landry.
And here to talk about it, we have Elizabeth Ware and Mark Robikoff. And welcome, guys.
Good afternoon, Jean, Steve. Nice to be here.
Hi there, Jean. Hi, Steve.
And Mark, what's this play about? Now, what are you doing in this play?
quite a number of things, Jean. I think that most people are probably familiar with the story, but they're probably not familiar with how we do this particular production. We're doing It's a Wonderful Life as a live 1940s-style radio play with five actors, which means aside from the two leads, the other three actors are playing quite a number of different parts, myself included.
Mark, have you ever counted up how many roles you play in this?
I haven't, because some of the characters, okay, the bridge keeper is the same guy as the guy that lost the money. But
you spoiled it for us now.
Same character voice instead. Anyway.
And Mark, one thing I think is fascinating about this play, going along with that notion of playing so many different parts, is that you as an actor are also playing an actor who plays these 50 million roles. That must be a lot of fun.
Yeah, we start out the show right from the moment the audience enters the theater as our actor characters, in my case, Freddie Fillmore, who's the host of the show. And these actors are in 1940s-style costume, and they're getting ready to do a live coast-to-coast broadcast in which the audience at Cyrano's is the studio audience for the broadcast. So they get to participate in terms of their reactions are part of the production.
And having seen a live radio show one time, the first thing they have you do is laugh and applaud before you ever go on the air.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Mark's character, Freddie, has a warm-up for the audience that he has a very clever way of asking people to turn their cell phones off without referring to them specifically as cell phones, because, of course, in 1946 they didn't have such a thing. But he warms the audience up with teaching them about the applause sign and also has had to handle some hecklers on occasion, and he's really good at it. I think you might think of stand-up, Mark, because he can handle these guys that think they're more funny than he is. Coming from the audience.
Well, they do still serve wine and beer at Cyrano's, you know, so that always makes things interesting.
What kind of hecklers can you have at Cyrano's for a radio show?
The one guy that that I think Liz is thinking of, he interpreted the my opening announcements for me. In case anyone couldn't figure out that I was talking about cell phones, he let them know, turn your cell phones off. So that was nice of him.
It's always a nice help when the audience gets involved like that.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
This is one of my favorite kinds of parts, though, where I get to do a number of characters. I just came out of Bruckner's last finale where I played five different people. And as an actor, I really enjoy the challenge of trying to differentiate different characters, different voices within the same show.
Well, being a great fan of Bruckner's last finale, you did very well, too.
Oh, thank you, Gene.
So what are some of the things you do? Do you change your voice? You know, one thing that's interesting about the radio concept is that the audience of the radio play is not seeing you, but the audience in Cyrano's is seeing you. So you've got to be conscious both of your physicality and your vocal quality. Do you do anything physically with your characters to change that for the audience in Cyrano's?
I definitely do, and I would say I probably would do that even if there wasn't a studio audience, just because that kind of physicality really helps you achieve the character and separate that character from the one you did just half a page ago.
And I think that's part of the joy of watching this show for the audience is seeing the actors work. And Dean Williams, who like Mark, plays about 12 different characters, he has some very specific physical movements that he does that the other actors now on stage have picked up on. So they, as their characters, are kind of playing along with him.
Well,
as
you can't play a character named Giuseppe Martini without doing a little bit of physicality to go along with it. So yeah, we have quite a variety. Freddie Fillmore is the actor that I'm playing, but Freddie Fillmore plays, among others, Joseph, the superintendent of angels, who tells much of the story of George's life, and who will introduce various characters such as Ernie the cab driver.
Hey, George, where you going on this here now honeymoon, huh?
So there's
the studio.
And then there's a bridge keeper that pulls them out of the water, you see, and they all got to be New York, but they all got to be different.
The studio suddenly got very crowded.
Dean Williams also does he does a great job with finding these different characters as well. He plays Clarence the Angel. That's kind of his primary role, but like you say, probably 8 or 10 or 12 others.
And then Katie Strock is the other one that has been tasked with finding a gazillion, all the female characters except for Mary. And she even plays Zuzu, the 4-year-old daughter. And that
adorably
is
so
adorable.
Yes.
For those of you who are just tuning in, this is Stage Talk here with our guests, Elizabeth Weir and Mark Ravikoff, talking about the play running at Cyrano's now called It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play. And we're talking about it as a radio play.
Right, right. And we have apparently more characters here in the audience than just those two. Now, Liz, this is the second time you've directed the show, right?
Yes, we're calling this a remount because we did it last year for the first time. There's one cast member change. Eric Cover was not available for this round, so we had to recast that role, and Dean Williams has stepped in and done a terrific job. So this is the second time around. We were able to pull the whole thing together with 4 rehearsals. Which it was tense, but it worked, and it was a lot of fun. I think Dean at first thought he had gotten in over his head, but he pretty fast got into the spirit of the thing, and by opening night, he was having as much fun as everybody else.
Yes, definitely, and even if people had seen the show last year, we were surprised to find how the show grew over the course of its run last year. People who saw one of our shows near the end of the run saw a fairly different show than what they might have seen at the beginning of the run, and we've continued to grow and find details with these characters now, so it's about as fleshed out as any production I've ever been in.
And on top of that, the actors provide all of the sound effects for the show, the slamming car door, which is our newest sound effect, mm-hmm. and you have to come and see how we do it, but all of the different sound effects, walking through snow,
breaking glass,
which
crickets.
I think is Mark's favorite sound
effect. Yeah, it's definitely my favorite.
And we just keep adding more stuff. In fact, Thursday we're adding a new one that nobody knows about in the cast. Yes.
Oh,
it's a surprise.
Let's hope it goes well.
It's a sound effect of a heckler coming in.
I saw this last year, the one that we filmed at the studio, and it was fun. There's no doubt about it. It's a lot of fun.
So, Liz, I mean, you say you remounted this show, but you're the director. Tell us, did you remount it? Did you redirect it? Were there any things in the show that you changed from last year that you as a director wanted to? I know Mark said you improved over the run of the show, but did you want to change anything in the show from last year?
You know, I was very happy with the way last year's show grew. Over the course of it, I was actually gone for the last 2 weeks of the run last year. So, when you're dealing with perfection with actors, you don't need to give them anything else. I think the main thing I had to do this last time was to rein them in the rehearsal process because they were so comfortable in their roles that they were cutting up a lot, which I don't think was...
No.
I don't think it was helping Dean too much. But directing a radio play, a lot of it is coordinating the sound effects, the traffic pattern to the microphone. But when I'm working with this caliber of actor, they find those characters, and it just takes, one or two little comments from me to get them going in the direction that I think it works. A lot of it has to do with pacing. In a play like this, it has to go much faster than normal people would talk because there isn't that visual element. There's only the actors standing at the mics and working at the Foley table. So you want to keep the focus moving forward all the time and keep the audience from getting tired of it. And my experience is I love this show so much. I sit every performance and watch the audience because it's great to see their responses. They're just so delighted and surprised all of the things that change. It's interesting. A lot of people have said that they don't like the movie, but for some reason, they really like the radio play version. And I can't put my finger on why that is, except that we've taken it out of the realm of reality. We haven't tried to make it real because the story isn't real. And the story, I think, resonates better because we're not trying for reality.
I can attest to that. One thing I noticed when seeing the play is that the characters are now in my imagination. They're no longer in front of you on the screen.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
For me, that made it really interesting to
yeah.
see that.
And I was one of the biggest directorial contributions I made was don't try to imitate the movie. And so all of the actors have found their way into these characters independent of Lionel Barrymore and Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed. And so there's a different way into the story. And, and every once in a while, Jimmy Stewart perks up.
Just a little bit,
just
yeah.
a little tiny bit, and then he disappears. And the same thing with Potter. Every once in a while, I hear Lionel Barrymore, and then he
just a subtle flavor.
Goes away. And
speaking of Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed, we can't leave this without giving props to our two lead characters who really just bring the audience with them and gets the audience to fall in love with them. Jamie Nelson, who's playing George Bailey, and Sarah Bethany Barrett, who is playing Mary Hatch.
Yes, and boy, do they have chemistry on stage.
Yes.
Well, we just ran out of time. So I'm looking forward to seeing it again, as I'm sure most of our audience is. And those who haven't, don't miss it. It's really, really fun. And so we have been talking to Elizabeth Ware and Mark Ravikoff about the Cyrano's production of It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio play. Thanks very much for coming.
Thank you, Gene and Steve.
Thank you.
And now here's the Stage Talk calendar. And remember, for another calendar or to post your event, go to Datebook 49 on alaskapublic.org.
The Alaska Native Heritage Center is seeking actors for its second annual Alaska Native Playwright Project readings. Actors, both Native and non-Native, male and female, of all ages, are needed for the readings. Interested performers should submit a resume and a picture if available, and their availability from January 3rd to January 12th, electronically, to Caleb Bourgeois at cbourgeois@alaskanative.net. Please include current contact information.
Up in Wasilla, Valley Performing Arts is presenting Cotton Patch Gospel through December the 23rd. Showtimes are Friday and Saturday at 8 and Sunday at 2. For tickets and information, call 373-0195 or go to valleyperformingarts.org.
Anchorage Community Theater's production of My Three Angels runs through December 23rd. This is a very amusing play and took me completely by surprise. Performances are on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday evenings at 7 and Sunday at 3. Tickets are available at actalaska.org or call 868-4913.
Alaska Fine Arts Academy in Eagle River is presenting their Christmas play, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, through tomorrow. Showtimes are 7 p.m. Friday and Saturday with a matinee at 2 p.m. on Saturday. For tickets and information, call 694-8909 or go to akfinearts.org.
Alaska Theater of Youth presents A Christmas Carol tomorrow at 2 and 7, and also The Best Christmas Pageant Ever tonight at 7. Performances are at the Sidney Lawrence Theater and the Performing Arts Center. For tickets and information, go to T63Arts or go to centertix.net.
TBA Theaters is presenting The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe at Alaska Pacific University's Grant Hall tonight through December the 22nd. Showtimes are Friday and Saturday at 7 and Saturday and Sunday at 3. For info, call 677-PLAY or go to play@tbatheater.org.
At Cyrano's It's a Wonderful Life, the radio show, continues through December 23rd. Showtimes are Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7 and Sunday at 3. For tickets and information, call 263-ARTS or go to centertix.net. Well, that's it for this week. If you'd like to download free podcasts of Stage Talk, visit our website at alaskapublic.org. Thanks for listening. Until the next time, I'm Jean Paul.
And I'm Stephen Hunt for KSKA.